Haas donation site. That's going to be something that we leverage a little more of this year. So look forward to lots of KBOO and lots of ways to learn to get involved.
Well, that's outstanding. We are just about out of time. Any parting thoughts for the listeners?
Well, thank you for listening. And tell like five of your friends and say like KBOO is amazing. They have a variety of programming and you can listen on your phone.
Word of mouth continues to be the best way to publicize what we do here.
So absolutely.
If you like what you hear, make sure that you tell your friends about it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And hopefully you'll come back and visit again soon and keep us updated on what's happening.
It's been a pleasure and I look forward to it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I'm on the mic. This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Right to Survive. First, some messages that are tailored for you.
The KBOO Foundation is seeking to fill two vacancies on the Board of Directors. The Board will elect the new directors at the February Board meeting. Are you interested in nonprofit governance and in helping to shape the future of your community radio station? Do you have 10 to 15 hours per month to support KBOO? Then this may be just the right opportunity for you. The application and instructions are posted on the KBOO website, kboo.fm, and paper copies are available at the station. In order to be eligible to fill one of these two vacant seats on the KBOO Board of Directors, you must be a KBOO member and you must submit a complete application by either emailing the document at kboocommunity@gmail.com or by mailing or dropping off the completed documents to the station to the attention of Timothy Welp, KBOO Community Radio, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Please send in your application by 5 p.m. February 15, 2016. If you have any questions, please contact the nominating committee at kboocommunity@gmail.com. Thank you for your support of Community Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the 33rd Real Music Film Festival running through February 8th. Real Music explores the live interplay between sound and image, music, and culture. Saturday, January 16th will be The Theory of Obscurity, a film about the Residents, released in 2015. Don Hardy's film tells the story of the group's start in rural Louisiana, its artistic awakening in the late 60s San Francisco, and follows its members to present day, where they are all still actively creating and performing. That's January 16th at 9:30 p.m. at 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information on the films and more can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 in Portland. I'm Ibrahim Mubarak of Right to Survive. On this show, we go to Ground Zero, Portland, Oregon, and report news and stories that corporate media don't cover. We'll bring the uncut reality from the perspective of the unhoused community.
This is Lisa Fay with Right to Survive Radio. R2S Radio goes into the houseless community, making their voices heard, speaking to individuals on subjects that directly relate to their daily struggles.
Somebody help me.
That's work.
This is not healthy.
Man.
I am not wealthy.
What I do, have the power to break the chains.
Doing what's right, you.
Good evening. I am your host, Lisa Fay, and we are tuned in to another hour of Right to Survive Radio here on KBOO.
And today's show, we're talking about Mayor Hales having issued a state of emergency on housing and homelessness. Some of the talking points for this state of emergency includes the city waiving zoning codes, converting city-owned buildings into shelters, cities working with Governor Brown to waive state zoning codes for buildings for shelters, building permanent housing for people served by the soon-to-be-built psychiatric emergency center here in Portland. Ted Wheeler states the need for more emergency shelters, mental health and addiction treatment, and transition housing. This will meet the needs of a lot of the houseless people, but it still does not provide permanent affordable housing. This is where Dan Sosselman comes in and wants to protect renters with more time when faced with no-clause evictions, another problem that is prevalent here in Oregon. All right, before I get started, I'd like to mention that this weekend, Right to Survive, along with Sisters of the Road, False, Right to Dream 2, Tents Alliance, Don't Shoot Portland, and of course, Right to Survive, will hold joint rallies and march around and in downtown to stand together against injustice and unjust laws. These events will be held this coming Friday, the 15th, starting at 8 a.m. and lasting throughout the day. As Martin Luther King himself said, we need to stand against injustice and disobey unjust laws. Our show tonight will show how some of the unjust laws have been imposed on the houseless community. Please enjoy the show.
But somewhere I read of the freedom of assembly. Somewhere I read of the freedom of speech. Somewhere I read of the freedom of press. Somewhere I read that the greatness of America is the right to protest far right.
This is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And today we're in Portland, Oregon, in Ground Zero in the houseless community. And our topic of today's show is Mayor Charlie Hales, a state of emergency and housing and homeless. And today I'm here with
Jeff Litticoat.
Jeff Litticoat, how long have you lived in Portland?
Since 1981.
That's an awful long time. I feel for you, man. Have you been houseless in any of those years? And if so, how long?
Well, and to an extent, I don't really consider myself houseless because I've got a shelter that I've made myself. And to an extent, everybody's shelters just have different thicknesses of walls. There are some apartments and houses here that I know other people who have houses that make their house look like a sleeping bag, but not regular good thick walls with no tarps involved. Houselessness, several years.
And in doing your time on the street, I'm sure you've seen a lot of things. How have the police changed in addressing the houseless situation with the people living on the street?
Well, most of my experience is in southeast Portland, and really there hasn't been that much change. They've been doing the same thing. They chase people around in circles. Depending on what time of the year it is, depending on, I don't know what the variables are that cause them to do what they do, but they inconsistently enforce the various rules that they have that are, I think, you know, designed mostly to harass the homeless.
And harassing the homeless, what do you mean? Some people who don't know and people who live on the street may not be aware of what we know as harassment, but can you give your definition?
Well, the city has paid out money in a lawsuit in federal court on the issue of taking people's property when they enforce the no camping ordinance. Okay, so the city often posts the posting that says it is a city policy to give people whatever it is, 24 or 48 hours notice of illegal campsite. After that time, your property within such and such a space may be removed. They don't always do that posting when they take people's property. That's one thing. Second thing is, even when they do have that posting, sometimes they don't do anything. So oftentimes people will ignore the postings. It's just systematic taking of people's property or arresting people and then getting them mixed up in the judicial system to, you know, leave the state or go into housing or kill themselves. They don't want to see people on the street. It generates complaints, which I'm not exactly sure what the base of the complaints is.
So you said something very interesting. They said they either want you to leave the state, get housing, or die. Now, the latter two is was a complicated thing. I don't know if people leaving the state. I think you have more people coming here. But getting housing, due to popular belief, and I said this many, many, many times, and I'm going to say it many, many, many more times, some houseless people do work. They just can't afford housing. So how do the city expect them to get housing when the affordability is not there?
Sometimes it's affordability. Sometimes it's just not having a rental track record. It gets harder and harder for people to find housing, period, regardless of their income. And yes, a lot of homeless people work.
Then you mentioned about the people or just died. Do you know the numbers of people that died this year? Because I'm sure what you're talking about are the sweeps about the police coming in, taking people's shelter, their sleeping bags, their blankets, their personal stuff, and all they have is their coat or their sweater they have on. And this, I'm not going to call this inhumane weather. This is good weather. But not for people to just walk around sweating while it's raining and snowing.
I don't know how many people have died as a result of the harassment policies towards the homeless, because it would be hard to make a causal link. I do know that people's lives are lessened. Everybody's life is lessened. I mean, even if they don't take your stuff, you're constantly worried about, as you return to your place, you're asking yourself now, is my place still going to be there, or have the police taken it? Just that constant stress alone, I'm sure, shaves, you know, days, if not years, off of people's lives, depending on how strong that person is. As far as the bad weather goes, last year, not this year, but last year, when they opened up the so-called warming center for people, it was all splashed all over the news. That very next morning, I saw the inmate work crew from Multnomah County taking people's belongings without any postings, taking their sleeping bags, their clothes, their tarps, things that they need to stay alive.
Have you ever been in a, let's call, move-along place, or where they tell you to move along to where you're going to go, or have you ever been in a situation where the police or clean and safe or the private security guard swept you from a safe place that you have found to reside in?
Oh, all the time, at least one time that I can remember, without any sort of posting, and they took everything that I had, and there's no recourse for that. What they do currently is, so the city is under, had a federal court decision that said don't take people's property. One of the times that I had the posting and then continued, they took all of my stuff. They were very carefully inventoried it all, gave me a property receipt for it, and then when I went to the property, the police property room, to retrieve my things, none of it was there.
So when ODOT's saying that when people not there and they sweep camps, they gather their stuff and put it in bag and they can come get it, that's a downright lie because it's not there. And then I also heard that if you don't have ID to prove that's your stuff, you don't get it. So that means they got to tag all your stuff with your name on it and say, this is your stuff. And we know they don't do that.
Okay, so one time that I retrieved my stuff from property, I had to take the bus, and the quantity of things that I had was very small at that time, and it was still just a pain in the neck to haul the stuff up the hill from the property room, which is down over by the NATO mall thing in Northwest Portland. You know, and even when there's a posting, by the way, it's an absurd process. Okay, so the postings say that this area has been declared an illegal campsite. Well, for starters, who makes that declaration? Is there any process? No. It's just wherever that inmate work crew process decides to unfold. When they do that, how far does that illegal campground extend? Where does it extend? Well, it's wherever they want it. That's, by definition, what a police state does, is the police are able to take and become both the determiners of law, the executioners of law. This area has been declared a no low-income housing zone. And then they can proceed, just as they do now with the homeless, taking their property without due process, arresting people just because they have declared it so on their own as police people.
Okay, so now you talked about the sweeps and talked about how the police harass you. You talk about how you lose your sentimental values, how you lose your shelter and everything you own, and nobody cares.
Yeah, I've lost the last of my copies of my poetry. I've lost the last photographs that I had of my daughter. I've lost the last original paintings that I had, and like that. And it's, I mean,
seems like they don't give a hoot. So now Mayor Charlie Hales has declared a state of emergency on housing and homelessness, which means in this type of weather, which we have been in the rain, in the snow, in the cold, under certain temperatures, that the police shouldn't sweep makeshift encampment sites or people sleeping on the sidewalk, as long as there's no bike chop shop, as long as no drug or violent activity, and long as the place is clean. So have you been noticing that campsites have still been swept or raided by the police?
Absolutely. As far as Charlie Hales' announcement goes, I don't know, maybe he's found a change of heart, had some epiphany or something. But he was in office for 4 years there. I think, you know, and he's very close with the construction companies. So to me, it looks more like he's got a facade on that says he's concerned about the homeless. But I bet a dollar to a dime in his supporting the building of buildings to ostensibly house the homeless. That process also does not get rid of the homeless. You don't get rid of the homeless. Some of the homeless choose to be homeless, and that doesn't mean that they just like wandering around on the streets or getting harassed or being cold. It means that they don't want to participate in other aspects of housing. I've felt a number of times, especially during periods of time where I'm about to be swept or have just recently been swept, and then I walk down the street and I have to take, you know, 5-10 minutes just to cross it because there's so many damn cars. The people that are homeless have the lowest carbon footprint of anybody around. When you look down on the homeless and judge them, you know, think about this one. They're at least not killing the planet like the rest of y'all.
And that's true. That's the corporation and the industrial complex people. So when you was out here when we had that snowstorm, they call it a snowstorm. I'm from Chicago. That was a snow breeze to me. And it rained and the flooding came and it was flooding people out their homes, out the apartment building. Cars couldn't go down the roads. And I'm sure houseless people was being flooded in their tents. But you seen Red Cross and Mercy Corps come to the rescue of the people that lived in houses due to the mayor's declaration of emergency and housing and homeless. Did Mercy Corps or Red Cross come offer you to go into a motel after your stuff was waterlogged and got flooded?
What do you think?
Well, for the listening audience, because I don't want to put words in your mouth and I don't want to make stuff up, because this is a realist. This is a reality show. We believe in realism here. So I want to know, and the listening audience want to know, what happened to you during this time.
Well, let me put it this way. I didn't know Mercy Corps operated within the United States.
But they get our money.
Well, if they were acting under that declaration of an emergency, well, maybe they're saving up for a rainier day.
But they did go and get the people and help the people that was housed. They did help the people that was in apartment. They did help the people that were stranded in their trucks and their cars that couldn't go on the river. Why didn't they help the people that lived on the street?
Well, this is a general overriding thing. They're never going to solve, I don't think they're ever going to get really serious about solving homelessness in this country, though they may make big strides on a case-by-case, you know, city-by-city basis. And let me clarify something that I said earlier. I said when they build additional low-income housing and use that as a hedge against homelessness, they're never going to solve the problem that way, because there are always new homeless people, youth that are in rebellious mode, new people that are mentally disturbed. And in this country, to get people to scrub toilets at the wages that they pay, they pretty much need to have a class of people under that has a terrible life. That is, I think, a part, at least, of why this country is not going to solve its homelessness problems. It's going to tax the taxpayer and claim that it's working towards that goal. It's going to declare all sorts of emergencies, and you're going to hear things in political speeches, but you'll notice, you ought to notice, that decade after decade, nothing changes.
So you saying that this country is using houselessness to survive this economic crunch.
They make an example out of the homeless of here's what will happen to you if you don't continue to, you know, be the hamster on the wheel and cooperate and participate and follow the orders of this ruling order.
Okay, and that's the American dream.
Yeah, the American dream, which was hatched, which was a specific plan that came out of a think tank after World War II. They recognized that the economy improved when they were making all sorts of guns and tanks and airplanes and boats, but they weren't going to be able to justify that, they didn't think. And they sat down and they said, well, how are we going to do this with this economy? And the answer that they came up with was the American dream, home ownership, and all of the little accoutrements that go with that, and unnecessarily leading towards species extinction.
So there you go, Bert. I used to coin a phrase when I first started my advocacy and activism. They call it the American dream because you have to be asleep to believe it. And that's true. That's true. Anything else you would like to say, Jeff, before we leave you?
Please, people, call the city commissioners. Oh, no, better still. Call Deborah Cafori, because Deborah Cafori is the Multnomah County chair. And she appears to have she's from a very progressive political family here in Portland. But she, as the chair, is the person that is in charge, the primary vehicle through which the sweeps are conducted. If she's true to her word, then she's got to put a stop to the activities of that inmate work crew.
All right. Thank you very much. This is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And today we're in Portland, Oregon, on Ground Zero in the houseless community. And I'm speaking with
Trina Sutton.
Trina Sutton, are you houseless?
Part-time houseless.
Okay, and how long has been going?
A year and a half. I came to Right to Dream to learn from the best.
Okay, so what have you been doing in this year and a half in your advocacy on houselessness?
Well, we've been trying to get our own sanctioned homeless housing, transitional housing, not as opposed to a camp, going in the southeast. And we focused on not just the houseless, but survivors of domestic violence, whether they be men or women, and homeless veterans.
Now, you've been out here for a year and a half, and have you noticed any change in the police activity towards houseless people?
Well, I've seen some pretty nasty police action downtown. I've been very pro-police for a very long time, and in the southeast we have some wonderful officers that I deal with, and with Clackamas County Sheriff's Office. But then I've seen the ones that are not so much. They can be very ruthless, very demeaning towards the homeless, and I've seen it downtown, and I've actually witnessed it with my own eyes and heard it with my own ears. The mayor just recently took some type of step where he wanted, the office did, video and some type of video evidence or still pictures of the police misbehaving. We didn't have it at that point. We had the aftermath, but not during the sweep. And then I remembered there was a man over in the southeast that we had video and stills of a female police officer absolutely tearing up his everything that he owned, throwing it in very deep muddy water, including his work tools. So now they've deprived him not only of his possessions, his clothing, food, but his ability to make a living. So the mayor's office did have this video and stills that I took with my own camera, the stills, and yet that officer is still working.
Okay, now what about, I don't know how long ago this has been, but it's office from the mayor's office that stopped the sweeps during this time, during this winter time, that let people stay on there as long as they're not doing nothing grossly outrageous. So have you heard of sweeps that's still going on?
Oh, yes, it's been all over the news. Now, I know that they call it very often a cleanup as opposed to a sweep. The laws are definitely different. We stopped a sweep one day, or should I say, Josh Albers stopped it. Mayor Hales was out of town, where they were calling it a cleanup, but they were taking people's tents. They were taking their
That's
work tools.
That's cleaning up, isn't it?
That's, yeah, tearing down their tents, their sleeping bags. And I went over to Southeast, I was there in Southeast Portland. I went out on the Springwater Corridor and witnessed it myself. And they're calling it a cleanup. And I said, this cannot be a cleanup. Besides, it's in a terrible weather. You're taking the tents. So actually, Josh Albert stopped it. But then I got a call the next day from Sam, who is a decent man, a park ranger. And he said he's making a decision to stop the sweeps. And
now, you know, it was a sweep over by the Buck Clark TPI building just yesterday. They swept people. And it's going to be more sweep as we talk today. I don't know where this location is at, but we got sweeps from ODOT. We got sweeps from St. Francis. Does what the mayor say or his office say, does it matter what they say or the police or the private security guards going to do what they want to do anyway?
The private security guards, these, we call them wannabe cops or they're retired cops, they have absolutely no authority to be taking jack from these people, and yet they are. I think private security is one of the worst ideas I have ever seen. I've seen it in action down here, downtown. I've seen them taking pictures and laughing at the homeless while they're sleeping. I have seen some really mean stuff.
Okay. So, you know, the mayor's office and the mayor, Charlie Hales, announced state of emergency on housing and homelessness. Do you know about that, and what do you think about it?
Well, yes, I do know about it. I knew before it even came out on print. I did get a call from the mayor's office that this was going to happen. The policies are very good. It frees up money. It eases zoning codes and so forth. And I like the idea of having shelters, but shelters are temporary. They go in, they leave, and they're just in as bad shape as they would before. In fact, the shelters are open, even the warming shelters, which I work at one over in the south. East. Those are great ideas, but that is not going to address homelessness. It's a band-aid to fix it for that night.
So tell me this, when you say a state of emergency on housing and homelessness, who is that referring to?
I suspect it's supposed to be referring to the homeless. I mean, call me silly on that one, but when you're sweeping the homeless, demeaning them in the process, that's not really addressing it. It looks good on paper. I'd like to actually see the muscle to back that up. I'd like to see the mayor really sit down and have talks with the leaders of the homeless community, such as Ibrahim and others, and just say, what should we do? We have this money, this $30 million, very little of it's been allocated. It's still out there, and I'm going to tell you, I heard Pastor Steve Kimes stand up at a Gresham meeting one time and tell everybody, including the chief of police in Gresham, that we know there are people out there, many, many homeless people that cannot go right into traditional housing. Do what it's supposed to do, Mayor. Address the real issues, not a temporary band-aid.
So when it rained and people houses was falling off of mudslides, and people houses and apartment buildings was getting flooded and people was being stranded in their cars, Mercy Corps and Red Cross came to their rescue and put those people that was in houses into motel. Do anybody know what happened to the houseless community that was in tents and stuff? They got their stuff, and not just in the Springwood, but all over, because houseless people is all over. What happened to the houseless people in the beginning, before the rain, before the thing, when it was snowing, and if it's a state of emergency, couldn't Mercy Corps and Red Cross spend that money on American citizens instead of across seas?
Well, I don't know about Mercy Corps, but I did have extended communication with Red Cross. Most of my clients over in the southeast they would live along Johnson Creek because they want to live in low levels so they're not in the spotlight of police, environmental services, parks department. They don't want to be seen because they want to be able to stay there and avoid sweeps. But when Johnson Creek flooded, many of my clients said they woke up floating in water. Everything that they owned was taken by Johnson Creek. They barely got out with their bodies intact. And I called Red Cross. Well, they actually convened an emergency meeting asking if the homeless, their tents, when they lose everything, does that meet the same level as when somebody's flooded out of an apartment or a house or whatever? I got calls back from some really good people at Red Cross. They said, yes, it does. We're going to send our partners out to get tents, sleeping bags, that type of thing, our community partners. And then when we kept calling back and calling back, they said, well, they haven't been able to do anything. Finally, I know Clackamas Service Center did buy a bunch of tents. Pastor Mike Davis, he donated tents and sleeping bags. That's how the homeless ended up recouping at least enough to keep them alive.
But they were still in the elements. They were still in the rain. They were still in the snow. They were still in the cold. Why couldn't they say, we're not going to get them no tents. We're going to put them in hotels, just like the people in houses. So are they telling us, inadvertently and in my face, that the houseless community is not, they're not required to help the houseless community like they are required to help people that live in houses? Which emergency are they talking about?
That's a great question, Eve, and you're absolutely right. They did not offer any of the clients motel vouchers or anything like that, but what they did say to me was, they live out here year after year, so they know what the elements are. Well, no, Johnson Creek doesn't flood every single year. Areas that may have flooded the year before did not flood the year after that. I mean, it was, you know, it was hit and miss. They do not consider the homeless on the same level as they do the housed.
Okay. Is there any last thing you would like to say before we take off?
Well, I'm always going to put a pitch for the sanctioned transitional housing that we're wanting to build in Southeast Portland. Our architect just happens to be a police officer, and that's why we were able to get so much movement on this. In an area that's industrial, that it would be great to have it. And we're proposing converting shipping containers into 12 by 15, like mini studios that have heating and will have bathroom, showers, and sinks. We want to give people the tools to transition into more traditional housing, maybe go to school, get a job if they're waiting for like HUD housing. Give them a place of safety where they do not have to be afraid of getting everything they have stolen by housed and the predatory unhoused, or by the community that likes to come out and bum beat. People can leave their stuff in safety, go to school, find a job, save up money, and transition into regular housing.
All right, thank you very much, Trina said. Bye.
A man dies when he refuses to stand up for that which is right.
Yes.
A man dies when he refuses to stand up for justice.
Yes.
A man dies when he refuses to take a stand for that which is true.
Yes.
So we're going to stand up right here.
This is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And today we're in Portland, Oregon on Ground Zero in the houseless community. And our title is Mayor Hale's Declaration of Emergency on Housing and Homelessness. And today I'm here with...
My name is David Keefe Davis, K-I-F Davis. I'm with Fight the Sweeps and Multnomah County Cop Watch.
And how long have you been doing this, Keith?
I've actually been doing a lot of cop watching stuff since about 1997 and kind of really got into it in the early 2000, around 2002. Did it full. I've been kind of doing it a lot full time. And I've been homeless for over 6 years in this town before. So I've dealt with a lot of the sweeps personally, and we started up a group, Fight the Sweeps, a while ago with the Anarchist Black Cross and members of Gresham Cop Block and Multnomah County Cop Watch and Film the Police Portland and other local groups. And I've been actually, you know, fighting homeless sweeps on my own as a homeless person in living in homeless camps and other stuff too, and filmed the police multiple times in homeless camps. And I've kind of been doing a lot of this stuff for at least, you know, 5 or 6 years as far as directly fighting a lot of the sweeps going on.
So we really, the public and the houseless community, can really come to you for police accountability, huh?
Yeah, I definitely know a lot about that, and they're not very accountable, I can tell you that.
Now, since you've been on the streets, and now this new thing Charlie Hale's come up with, declaration state of emergency on housing and homelessness, have you seen any change in the way the police treat the houseless community?
I've actually seen them slowing the sweeps down, but they're definitely still going on. Supposedly, they're supposed to totally stop, and there's supposed to be a moratorium on sweeps, but basically, they've kind of maybe slowed down 20% or so and have allowed a few campers in certain areas, but they're still really sweeping the downtown areas like daily. There has been a little bit of progress. Like Hazelnut Grove, they're housing 40 people there. Probably 40 people become homeless every 2 weeks just being priced out of their apartment or no-cause evictions or all the other stuff that's going on. So it's really hardly making a dent in the homeless stuff. Maybe if they did 20 to 30 times what they're doing, they might actually put a big dent in things. But I think at this point, a lot of it's just window dressing, trying to make Charlie Hales look good. I think, you know, a lot of the various poverty pimp agencies are going to wind up doing a lot better than the homeless out of this.
So if, I mean, you said a lot of things in what you just said. You're saying people are constantly losing their housing because of no-cause eviction and affordability. These people don't know how to live in the street, so they want to protect their family if they have children, and they hide in their cars under bridges and vacant buildings and stuff. Some even couch surf. So how is that being addressed when you say you got a freeze on sweeping and you constantly sweep behind the mayor's back and you're seeing more and more people on the street?
Yeah, it's definitely affecting a lot of people, and more people are becoming homeless, and sweeps are definitely killing people. There's lots of people that die from the sweeps, and they just become displaced. They can't have their little communities and things that they've established through being in certain neighborhoods and surrounding themselves with other homeless people and stuff like that. So it's basically a forced death march where people are being woken up sometimes multiple times in a night. I mean, I personally have been woken up on really rainy nights before, like 5 to 6 times in a night. You know, you close your eyes and you're 10 minutes into your sleep, and then the next thing you know, you have a security guy flashing a flashlight on you, telling you you need to leave, and taking your picture on his phone and saying, if you come back, we have your picture and you'll be criminally trespassed, you know. So it's a big deal, and there definitely needs to be a lot of shelters open for families and couples and people with dogs. There's way too many restrictions at all the shelters, and basically they need to be more inclusive of actual members of the community and all the various barriers and things. And that, I think there actually needs to be stuff like wet shelters too, where people that are alcoholics can go and still drink or be intoxicated too and be able to sleep. If a lot of people know about alcoholism, a lot of people that are severe alcoholics, they'll have seizures if they don't drink. So to tell someone who's a severe alcoholic that they can't even drink is basically putting their life at risk. We need shelters for all different sectors of our community. We need multiple tent camps. All types of structures need to be put up. Tiny homes. There's a lot of different things that can be done that aren't being done. And basically, as the city spins its wheels amongst all the various agencies, you know, they're not really making much progress. They're having all these meetings, but they're not enacting any real plans. So far, I've just seen a lot of people sitting around at board meetings and talking about what they're going to do and not much being really done.
So how has it really happened to sweep people, like you said, where do they go? Like you said earlier, social service agencies come look for people, and then after they sweep, the people is gone. So where do they go? How do people react to getting their sentimental value stolen from them by the cleanup crew, taken away, and gangster from them, and being thrown in trash and they walk in the streets without nothing to protect them from the rain, from the elements, from when they sleep, you know, they sleep in bags and go, how is this declaration state of emergency for the houseless people? I mean, I can understand for housing that you're not supposed to raise the rent up no more, but what about the people that's in the streets? That's the concern. That's the thing we should be talking about.
Yeah, it's really a traumatic experience living in the streets and being swept all the time, or being in fear of being swept, you know. Like, a lot of people get these notices and it says you will be swept within a week's period of time. When that happens, a lot of people, as soon as they see those notices, they go into panic mode. A lot of people have mental illnesses too, and health problems. It compounds their health problems. Some people go into full mental crisis mode, get suicidal, kill themselves, you know, wind up in the hospital. There's a lot of impact all these different sweeps do. It's not like you're just moving someone and then they just go to another space. And sometimes it's really hard to find a space that you feel secure in as a homeless person, and you have, you know, a certain little support network with various other campers, and then you're suddenly swept away and you're all alone. So, it destroys the community. You know, it wreaks total social havoc. It displaces people. They can't get in touch with outreach workers that they might have been in contact with. You know, there might be someone that's going to get into housing within the next week. They don't have a phone, and then the outreach worker comes to them, and then they lose their housing because the person can't even find them. So it really is a big roadblock to people getting into actual housing, and, you know, it's just a traumatic experience for people that are already traumatized sleeping in the streets.
Okay, now two things that I want to bring to your awareness, or maybe the our listening audience who look at Mercy Corps and Red Cross as being a humanitarian organization or corporation. Let's say corporation. When the people's housing was being demolished by the mudslides or by the flooding of the streets and the river, Mercy Corps and Red Cross went to their rescue and put them in housing. Did anybody think about what happened to the houseless people that were living in tents got affected by that? What happened to them?
Yeah, like all the people that got flooded out on Johnson Creek. Yeah, there is a whole different set of standards for property owners and people that are in apartments compared to the actual homeless, which is very hypocritical, because you would think that the homeless people in the streets would be entitled to the same emergency services through Red Cross and other agencies. I mean, a lot of these agencies like Red Cross and Mercy Corp and all these other places, they actually go to other countries and they don't pick and choose, oh, you're homeless, oh, you only lived in a card box house, you're not eligible. It seems like there's different standards for other countries compared to America. I think they need to start doing the same stuff that they do in other countries, service all homeless people and people that are affected through displacement, through floods, or whatever disaster it is, whether it's a natural disaster, economic disaster.
So, but they're using American money to help other countries, and they refuse, while using American money, to help American people. Is that sort of chaotic? Yes or not?
Yeah, it's definitely hypocritical, and it doesn't make much sense. Unless it's planned that way to be like a crisis capitalism type of thing where you can always cash in on the crisis and make money off it, which, you know, most of the wars in the world and other things are basically all crisis capitalism. I think crisis capitalism is really what is dictating a lot of the economics of our country, and it's one of the main reasons why nothing gets fixed, because these people are making so much money off crisis and capitalizing off all these various crises. You know, I mean, nonprofit agencies in America are one of the fastest growing sectors of business and the economy, so that tells you that, You know, we wouldn't need a lot of nonprofit agencies if society actually worked good. So there's a lot of crisis capitalism, which is dictating our current reality we're living in now.
So you were just in altercation with an unjust law being imposed on a houseless community. And what you were stating was they're not supposed to be any more sweet, but you saw and you filmed the police sweeping poor people with nowhere to go off the streets. Can you elaborate on that for the listening audience on what happened?
Yeah, I got a tip from one of my friends who works with the Free Hot Soup Group, and she lives down by the Bud Clark, and she actually saw the sweep going on and saw them issuing citations. And I was on the bus when she called me, and then I went down to go try and film the sweep, and I got there towards the about an hour later, towards the tail end of it. There was only maybe four or five campers left, but I heard they were issuing citations through my friend, so I went up and I asked the officer Dave Sanders if they were issuing citations for camping. He told me that no, they are not doing that at all. And I asked him, well, are you giving people a verbal warning? And he said, we're not doing that either. And there was a homeless lady behind him, and she said, you're lying. And then she showed me the citation. And then I went across the street and interviewed this other homeless camper. You can watch all these videos on the Fight the Sweeps PDX, Fight the Sweeps Portland group. All those are up. Basically, during that altercation, I was issued a citation for interference with the police when I was filming the homeless sweep going on. Yeah, so during my arrest, I was just trying to document it all, and I was basically, you know, staying out of the officer's way and everyone's way and just filming it and asking a few questions. They obviously didn't like the fact that I was uncovering that they were issuing citations to homeless people when they're supposedly not supposed to be doing stuff like that. And, you know, I think the fact that I told the officer said that I didn't think I was interfering with their operation, and that I'm probably going to file a complaint against him, that I was going to follow his order and move back, but I was doing it under duress, and I was going to file a complaint against him. And then about basically 5 minutes later, he came up to me when I was in a completely different area and issued a interfering with the police charge on me. So basically, I wasn't in their way. They were conducting business and doing their homeless sweep, and all I was doing was asking some questions and videotaping. And now I have a criminal court case for interference with the police.
So the thing of it is, we have an MLK Day march the 15th of this month, and that's one of our cry out, obeying unjust laws. And they criminalize you, so what's right and what's wrong? It's like that, I can't say that four-letter word, so I'm going to say dang if you do and dang if you don't. So they call me the dang dang man, I guess. I mean, so what should someone do under that circumstances when they know this law is unjust, they know it's being imposed on them, and if they don't obey an unjust law, they're going to get arrested? What should a person do?
Well, ultimately, they have to make up their own mind what they're going to do, and if they're willing to face the consequences for standing up against unjust laws. Sometimes I will follow some unjust laws just so I don't go to jail. I think we live in such a police state that you're basically putting your butt on the line if you do, you know, disobey unjust laws. But I think it's also our civic duty, and we're basically in a police state, and the only way we're gonna make it less of a police state is through actual resistance. And the more people that actually do resist, the less chance they have of singling out just the individual that does stand up and is the lone voice in the crowd. So I definitely recommend people do stand up against unjust laws and take a stand. You should weigh the personal risks, and you know, if you have family members or other thing that you need to support, you should maybe put all those variables into the equation.
Okay, thank you very much, Kip Davis. We appreciate the work you do, and keep feminos, police Nazis, man. So long. Yeah.
We have no alternative but to keep moving with determination. We've gone too far now to turn back. And in a real sense, we are moving and we cannot afford to stop. And because our nation has a date with destiny. I'm here to tell you tonight that the businessmen, the mayor of this city, the police commissioner of this city, and everybody in the white power structure of this city must take a responsibility. It's time for us to say to these men that if you don't do something about it, we will have no alternative but to engage in broader and more drastic forms of civil disobedience in order to bring the attention of the nation.
This is Ibrahim Mubar from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And today we're on Ground Zero in Portland, Oregon, in a houseless community. And our topic is state of emergency on housing and homeless. And today I'm here with
Vahid Brown, work on homeless organizing, work with the Hazelnut Grove Camp in North Portland.
And how long have you been doing that, Vahid?
I started working with Hazelnut Grove in September of last year and have been their liaison to the city since that time.
Have you ever been houseless?
I have been houseless. I have been in a situation where I did not have my own place. I was not on the streets, though, so I have not experienced street houselessness.
Okay. So how is Hazelnut Grove holding up to in the present situation with all the rain, the mud, the sweeping of other encampment sites, and building a good, safe place for people to reside?
There's been a lot of strains on the community, like all those things you said, but they're doing pretty well. There's a lot of community support. That just having the sort of the decriminalization of their space, where the city is saying you can be here and we will not send the police on you, really allows for so much room to open up for community mobilization and to build infrastructure to deal with the weather. It has been a strain to have, you know, the other parts of the city sending other houseless people out there. So we've been dealing with overflow and stuff like that. But overall, the community is doing well.
Are you aware of Mayor Charlie Hale's state of emergency on housing and homelessness?
Yeah, definitely. It was his declaration of intent to put that before city council that started my efforts to advocate for Hazelnut Grove. It was there were campers there at Greeley that were going to be swept at that time. And I asked the mayor when he declared his intention if he would turn around and sort of stop that performing that sweep and drew attention to what sweeps were doing to the houseless community and how damaging they are and how harmful they are and how they create problems for everyone, every other service that's providing help to the houseless. And the city has said that it's letting up on sweeps, and that's been the statement under the state of emergency. Now, we're definitely seeing some problems with that, right? So just this week at Union Station, there was a sweep at off the sidewalk there, and there was film of it by Kif Davis, and I still don't know what the deal is with that. You know, I haven't heard from the city how that fits with this kind of moratorium on sweeps.
Okay, and also with that, there's a little island between Burnside and Sandy, and in St. Francis, they can get swept also. So the question I want to ask you, what does not sweeping means to you or the city officials? I don't know, you probably can't speak speak for the city of Kishon, but you can speak for yourself.
Yeah, definitely. I can't speak for the city, and I want to talk with them soon about the recent events. What it means to me is that, you know, a coordinated effort citywide to first stop sweeping, because sweeps only harm. They don't do any good for anyone. They're not improving safety. They're not improving sanitation. They're creating crisis for people. They're creating medical emergencies for people. They're creating situations where people lose their tents, their tarps, or sleeping bags in sub-zero weather, and are subject to potentially dying outside. So we need all of the different actors that affect houseless people on the streets. The Oregon Department of Transportation, the City of Portland, Clean and Safe, all the agencies and departments of the city to be united and have a coherent policy where, first of all, we're not sweeping. And then we can work on what are the solutions to get the 2,000-plus houseless people into, you know, more humane situations than sleeping on the ground.
Now, what they're doing is that they're not using the Portland police. What they're utilizing the Pacific Patrol Service or, you know, their private security guard. And when I went up to them, they said they're not sweeping, they're cleaning the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I have another friend who's an activist that works with Free Hot Soup. And, you know, she addressed Central City concern and you know, and said that there's we have a real problem with what Clean and Safe is doing, you know, as a community of advocates for the houseless. You know, they're sweeping people, and again, we heard the same thing in that situation where Clean and Safe said it's not sweeps, it's cleanups. But, you know, it's just a rhetorical, you know, that's mincing words. What they're doing is identical to all the other instances of enforcement that we talk about as sweeps, where they come and they say you need to move along, and they have a dumpster or a trash or whatever, and they take all the things and they put them in the trash. That's a sweep. That's what's happening.
Right. So, I mean, that's what we do when we clean our house. We sweep our floors and put the trash into the garbage can. So you can't clean without sweeping. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to play on words.
Yeah.
Another thing about this emergency on housing and homeless emergency, you know, homeless thing, is that I noticed when the people in the Pearl District was flooded and houses was falling because of mudslides, Mercy Corps, and put them up in motels and stuff. What's the difference between people living in houses on the streets? Why didn't the houseless community get put in hotels when they tents and stuff got swamped by mud or by rain and the water?
Yeah, and I heard from someone, I'm not sure if they were from the county or the city, but recently heard that was brought up in a meeting that I attended, and I heard from one of the relevant government officials that they said that the houseless were put up, that they did put some of the houseless people there in hotels, so I'm not really sure, but I mean, that would almost surprise me if they did, right? Because we see that consistently, you know, when the mayor and the city says that this is an emergency, you know, they need to treat it like one, right? And when there's an emergency that affects people that are in homes, like a landslide or a flood, we put them up and we provide shelter for them. We treat that as an emergency and an emergency need. And we need to treat the people that are living outside now in the same way. Right. It's an emergency and they should be put up.
And to my knowledge, I did speak with Shannon Singleton, the new director of Join, and under her leadership, they did go find people and put them in hotel. But as usual, they was overcapacity, and they can put, you know, very few people in. But Mercy Corps, now, they have lots of funds, especially they can go overseas and help people, and they refuse to help the people in their own town or own city or own country.
Yeah.
Anything else you would like to add?
Yeah, I mean, if the city can use the building in Multnomah Village that's an emergency management facility, and say that because of the housing emergency, they can utilize an emergency management resource for housing, for emergency shelter, why can't they use the whole rest of the emergency management resources, like the big canvas tents and all of the you know, there are resources in Portland that can be deployed in the event of an earthquake, where they could provide emergency, like, you know, refugee shelters for people displaced by the earthquake. So if it is indeed an emergency, why aren't we using our emergency management resources?
Exactly. And the biggest, you're exactly right. And the biggest thing that I'm concerned with are the family with children that's being forced to live in the streets because not enough affordable housing. Yeah. What happens to them? Do they separate their families and create trauma in the children and the adults or the mother and father also?
Yeah, that's really a really terrible situation. I've been working with three different families who have you know small children and they've been displaced and they're on the streets, and I've been working on getting them inside, and been doing it kind of informally. Because when one of the advocates that was helping me work with this family reached out to, the services to see about getting them in, getting them an apartment or getting them into shelter, that they were told, no, the kids shouldn't be homeless. Call Child Protective Services. Mm-hmm. Call the state to come take the kids away. That was their answer. Mm-hmm. Not, oh, this is an emergency. Let's get that family inside. It's, oh, let's take the kids away from those parents and like put them into further crisis. That's not an appropriate community response. We need to put those people inside. It's just terrible.
So guests like me, you, Vahid, and the people that live on the streets, we want to know, Mayor Charlie Hales and the city of Portland, what is their definition by state of emergency on housing and homelessness? And who is it really for? Any one last word you'd like to say?
No, just thanks for your advocacy over many, many years to work on the decriminalization of sleeping outside and of houselessness, Ibrahim. You do a lot of work for this community. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
What we need in the United States is not division. What we need in the United States is not hatred. What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love and wisdom and compassion toward one another, feeling of justice toward those who still suffer within our country, whether they be white or whether they be black.
This is KBOO Portland. You've been listening to Right to Survive Radio. Up next is Hard Knock. And first, a few things we thought you ought to know.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the We Real Cool film series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month is Nacho Drum, showing Thursday, January 21st at 7 p.m. Released in 1993, Nacho Drum is a French documentary about the Romani people's journey from Northwest India to Spain, consisting primarily of music. Again, that's Nacho Drum, Thursday, January 21st, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
The KBOO Foundation is seeking to fill two vacancies on the Board of Directors. The Board will elect the new directors at the February Board meeting. Are you interested in nonprofit governance and in helping to shape the future of your community radio station? Do you have 10 to 15 hours per month to support KBOO? Then this may be just the right opportunity for you. The application and instructions are posted on the KBOO website, kboo.fm, and paper copies are available at the station. In order to be